Risky Business, your weekly security briefing with Patrick Gray, sponsored by Cybertrust.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Risky Business for June 12, 2007. We're departing from our typical format this week. The long weekend has made getting everyone on the podcast a tad difficult. And if you wondered about the coffee making sounds during the intro to this week's Risky Business, it's because we are in Melbourne this week. Best macchiatos ever. Now, we've still got plenty of interesting fat to chew on this week's show, so stay tuned. Today's topic is SCADA, or SCADA, or however you want to say it, control systems. We will be speaking to SRI International's Marcus Sachs about the security of SCADA systems. As you know, these are the systems that control our utilities, power plants, water treatment installations, so on and so forth. Marcus was the US Department of Homeland Security's first cybersecurity chief, or cybersecurity program director, or whatnot, before he went to SRI, which is essentially a think tank. We'll also hear from Cybertrust's David Shaw on the same issue. Now, normally Munir Katadia would be along to discuss this week's news, but like most in Australia, he's off today for the Queen's birthday holiday. So that leaves me to read this week's ZDNet headlines solo. Carl Hanmore from AusCert is also taking a well-earned break. He did last week also, but that was my mistake. If listeners wondered why the segment with Carl that I mentioned in the podcast introduction didn't appear, well, it's because I just forgot to put it in. Sorry about that, Carl. So, turning to the news, it's Patch Tuesday, and ZDNet reports Microsoft will issue four critical security bulletins today that address vulnerabilities in its Windows Mail, Internet Explorer, and Windows XP. These six bulletins include four critical fixes, according to Microsoft's Advance Advisory Notification. Microsoft aims to fix critical security flaws in Windows, Internet Explorer, Outlook Express, and Windows Mail in Vista. This mail bug sounds quite juicy indeed. In other news, Munir Katadia himself reported on claims made by the founder of Sophos antivirus, Jan Hruska. Now, he says viruses for Macs are available and moving around, adding, "It's not as though the Mac is in some miraculous way a virus-free environment." Now, the news comes as a worm affecting OpenOffice documents, which was discovered a month ago but not thought to be spreading in the wild, has gained momentum. It affects Windows, Linux, and, you guessed it, macOS 10. In other news, a US-based standards group has completed work on digital signature technology designed to ensure data authenticity between interacting web servers. Version 1.0 of the Digital Signature Services Standard provides a tamper-proof mechanism to provide electronic timestamps, postmarks, or official corporate seals or stamps of approval. CNetNews.com's Stephen Shankland reported members of the Organisation for the Advancement of Structured Information Standards, OASIS, as they are known, gave the digital standard its highest level of ratification. Tamper-proof, though, eh? Well, we'll have to just see about that. Turning to Australian shores now, and despite a series of technical hiccups, the first public trials of Australia's $62 million biometric SmartGate project are set to take place in Brisbane in August, 6 months behind schedule. SmartGate uses facial recognition technology to verify the identity of travellers by comparing a scan of their face with a facial scan encoded into the microchip contained within the newly launched e-passport here in Australia. Australian Customs Project Manager Gillian Savage attributed the delays to unforeseen integration issues. That's it for this week's news headlines. We'll be back in 19 seconds.
Find out why Sophos Endpoint Security beat McAfee and Symantec in a recent Cascadia Labs review. Go to sophos.com.au to read the test results and find out more. Sophos Security and Control for enterprise, government and small business networks.
Welcome back, and it's time now for our feature interview. This week we're speaking to Marcus Sachs. Marcus leads the Washington, D.C. research team of SRI International's Computer Science Laboratory. The team supports both the Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity Research and Development Center and the Defense Department's Cyber Threat Analytics Project. In January 2002, Marcus was appointed by US President George Shrub to serve concurrently on the staff of the National Security Council as the Director for Communication Infrastructure Protection in the White House Office of Cyberspace Security and on the board of the President's Critical Infrastructure Protection Board. So I sat down with Sachs and I asked him how we can avoid hackers penetrating our control systems and, well, you know, blowing stuff up. Marcus, it seems the utilities are increasingly using
IP-enabled SCADA systems. Now, do you think that is actually introducing an unnecessary level of risk into the operations of utilities?
Yes, it is. And with the enablement of SCADA, or PCS is another term we hear, process control systems, the industries like to go that route down the Ethernet path, IP, TCP. They are very easy to use protocols. They scale very well. It's good efficiency. The problem is when we start interconnecting it with internet-based systems, enterprise IT, email, web servers. There's a strong tendency to do this because if I already have an IT system that's running email and web and others, why not just cross-connect that with my plant network system? So now I have an efficiency. I don't have to have as many terminals.
Okay, well, I can give you a very good reason why not, since it introduces an unnecessary level of risk. So why haven't various governments around the world just outlawed this practice, which just seems to be really quite dumb?
Yeah, well, governments outlawing it is not going to happen. Here's the reality is that in the plant world, safety is the number one concern. So we have to have safety of the systems. We're running high pressures, high temperatures, other things that could kill humans should there be an explosion or a mistake being made. So safety is number one. Inside of the computer-controlled environment, we want to make sure the computers are, in fact, able to react to situations rapidly and quickly. So the concept for most of the plants of adding security, for example, to this runs counter to safety. It's going to slow down the response. It slows down humans being involved. The idea, again, is to let the people know what's going on, those who are operating the plants and even at remote sites, to have that capability. So it would seem intuitive, yes, governments would step in and say, let's pass laws forbidding this. But think about the complexities we're talking about here. What would that law say? How would it be worded? You know, what could you actually put into law that would make sense?
There should be no path for a data packet to come from outside a utility and touch a SCADA control device. I mean, that would seem to be some fairly effective, simple wording.
Okay, well, if you want to do that, what does outside mean then? Because let's take your digital home, which is very popular in many places. You drive into your driveway in your car, which has Bluetooth capability, and as soon as you drive in, the lights come on, your email gets transferred, you know, that you've been working on your car into your house. Well, what runs your home is a SCADA PCS type if you're at that level. So would that be illegal? Would we make it to where we can't remotely turn on a camera at our house because we don't want to have outside access? And
well, I was suggesting maybe in the case of utilities, not necessarily the automated home.
It's the same idea. So a utility, an electric plant, a railroad, others, what is outside, what is inside? What is the perimeter? And that's the hard part because 10 years ago, maybe we could have defined that pretty easy, with the perimeter being, you know, a physical location. We have the fences and property lines. Today, that perimeter, that physical perimeter, doesn't exist. We have connections between main plants, remote sites, wireless devices. You may have a plant manager who's carrying a mobile device, a telephone, otherwise that could bring up a status, could see what's going on. You have BlackBerry alerts. Where exactly is the perimeter? At what point do you say this is outside and this is inside? And that's your challenge for lawmakers. Now, running, of course, in parallel with that is plain politics. Lawmakers tend to pass laws that their constituents want them to pass. And if you have constituents in a large industrial area that would oppose such legislation, well, most lawmakers are not going to pass it, sounds like a good idea.
Are they the constituents or are they the interest groups?
Well, what's the difference there?
Well,
it's called factions. You know, this is government 101, right? So, in most democratically elected societies, the people are not necessarily 100% fully electing the folks who are running the country. It's the factions that do this, the special interest groups, the grassroots efforts, industries, and others that influence the governing bodies. And so, while the people may elect a representative, what that representative does in office is largely driven by what the special interest groups would like to have done. How do they get reelected? How do we get votes? And so you're going to be opposed by industries that don't want to have that severe regulatory type of law passed on top of it. And we also know in not just the United States but other countries, when a legislative body tries to pass technical laws, they always get it wrong.
I suppose I'd ask you, Marcus, what the consequences of a cyber attack, a successful cyber attack on a SCADA system at, say, a nuclear power plant or a gas pipeline or whatnot, what could the repercussions be?
Right. So the worst that could happen is a disruptive event. Somebody comes in from the outside, if we can define inside versus outside, causes things to stop, causes pumps, switches, valves to go the wrong direction or be reversed, perhaps cause an electric grid to cease or water to stop flowing or be purified. Trains could stop, airplanes. So a disruptive type attack is the worst.
So you're basically saying that, you know, by attacking a SCADA system, you might be able to cause a gas plant to explode.
In theory, that could happen. Now, we don't have any cases that we can point to that says here is something that's happened in the last several years where an outsider came in and blew up a gasoline plant. Theoretically, of course, we can do that.
Well, I'm sure you're aware that in Queensland several years ago, an employee of of Queensland Water, I think it was, successfully manipulated a SCADA system. He was an insider, but he did manipulate a SCADA system, causing millions of litres of sewage to be released into creeks and streams.
That is a classic example. We have a contractor who knew how the inside of the system worked, left that position but left having inside knowledge, then used a radio-based system to gain access. This was not through the internet, not a dial-up or typical internet connection, but a radio-based connection. But once on the inside, was able to manipulate the water supply system, mixing sewage and water. But
so he was able to bypass security through obscurity, but now that these systems are becoming more standard, wouldn't you say that the likelihood of an attack, a successful attack, is much greater?
It's much greater, but we have to ask a question too. If it's really great, which we understand it is, why don't we see it? Why don't we see these attacks happening every day if we're that vulnerable?
Well, you've got to have a motive, don't you? Someone needs to be motivated to do this.
And how many millions of people are connected to the internet? And how many websites do we see defaced on a daily basis? And the spam and the phishing. But it's good to think through these things, because what we're starting to learn is the disruptive type of attacks. The things we feared most back in the 1990s, well, there's been a few of them. You know, the Marucci water treatment. There were worms and viruses that have gotten into nuclear power plants, Blaster and Sasser.
Well, and there was also the massive power outage in the northeastern United States, which many people suggest came as a fairly direct result of a computer worm. Although the official government report played that down, people on the inside say, well, actually.
Well, it happened 3 days after Blaster came through. The best we understand is it was actually caused by a physical problem, a tree crossing wires, but it was then amplified by the fact that the Blaster worm had gone through a few days earlier.
So it might not have been such a catastrophic cascading failure had it not have been for the worm.
It's hard to predict what could have happened should something else have been in place. We do know that many of the monitoring systems were offline in order to patch for the worm. Now, whether that amplified and caused it to happen faster, well, there's no way of knowing. The coincidental information is certainly there. But we do know that many plants that weren't affected by that outage were blind at the time of those cascading failures. They weren't involved in it, but it made a lot of people very nervous, as could a worm actually cause something like this? Or done at the same time as a natural disaster, it could then amplify the effects of a natural event.
So, Marcus, what are you doing about it, mate? What are you going to do to save us?
So it's important that governments and private sector working together, first off, recognize that there's a problem. Don't deny the problem. Let's get it out, which many people are doing now. Plant supervisors, safety administrators, and others coming clean with, yes, this is an issue. And then it's a matter of linking together those that are in industry, those are in government, academia, the private sector, and others to find solutions. And so many of your large industries today are doing exactly that. They are very interested in how to solve this problem. But we're still a cultural issue. The IT security world, those who are accustomed to firewalls, intrusion detection systems, antivirus, we understand now how to do security. We know what it takes to secure an IT enterprise-type network.
But do we know how to secure a network to the level of satisfaction, to the level where it's acceptable to be using these sorts of SCADA systems? I imagine that locking down, you know, a database or a website, okay, sure, maybe you leave a 1 in 1,000 chance that a determined attacker can get in, but are those odds acceptable in the SCADA environment?
So that's the collision. You have the other side, the computers and computer systems that are run on the industrial side, where we have legacy systems, we have software that can't readily be patched and updated, we might have fixed passwords that can't be changed because they're hard-coded in. Very few people who understand how they work, because each side is a little different from another. So the culture on both sides are very different. Now, the IT enterprise security world, we've got many years of experience, and we'd like to bring that back over into the plant safety world. But the the industrial plant world is not too ready to accept this new IT enterprise way of doing business. So as the years go by, there will be more and more mixing of the blood and of the experience between the two. But today in 2007, we still see a separation of mindsets, a cultural mindset.
And are you satisfied with your rate of progress so far?
I think the first steps we've done, which is recognizing that there's a problem, have been moving along quite well. A lot of vendors today, 2007, are well aware of this. They're working now to build these types of security mechanisms into the SCADA world. But we still have a long ways to go. There's still a lot of denial, a lot of organizations that feel that we're isolated, we're not connected to the public networks, there's no way a bad guy can get in. But there's so many vectors, from the little memory sticks to wireless to inside threats and other ways that damage could be done to these networks. So again, education is a big key here.
Marcus Sachs, I'm terrified. Thank you very much for joining me.
I'm glad to terrify you. Have a happy day.
A terrifying Marcus Sachs there with an interesting take on democracy and SCADA systems. But we're not done on the topic yet. Next up, we're joined by David Shaw, who works for our sponsor, CyberTrust. Each week, we like to have our sponsor on the show. Risky Business, while independent, would not exist if it were not for the financial support of CyberTrust. So David is on the line. Now, David, it seems the Australian government is actually taking the threat to SCADA or SCADA systems, depending on how you want to say it, quite seriously.
Yes, that's correct, Patrick. As part of the critical infrastructure protection programs that are in place, the reliance on supervisory control and data acquisition networks, as they're known, and also on process control networks, is becoming quite apparent as a potential vulnerability to those elements of critical infrastructure. And in particular, there are many elements of critical infrastructure which are actually in private hands, transportation, food, communications, and so on, as well as energy, of course. And the government is putting programs into place not only to improve the information interchange amongst the various players in the area, but also to sponsor activities such as vulnerability controls, improvements to security, and so on, although they stop short of sponsoring any remediation.
I understand that it's AGs and the Department of Communications, Information Technology and the Arts.
Yes.
And I understand that they do actually go so far as to subsidise certain activities such as penetration testing and things like that, yeah.
Yep, anything to do with discovering and improving or discovering how to improve security around these areas. But as I said, they're being very careful not to get involved in any actual remediation or being seen to sponsor any remediation.
Yeah, so I guess if the vulnerability assessment team comes in and says, hey, you need to throw out your entire network and start again, they don't necessarily want taxpayers covering that.
Correct, and I guess there'd also be a possibility of are you picking favourites and so on in terms of the types of remediation which you'd sponsor.
Do you think the Australian Chief Security Officer, do you think that the people responsible for securing this type of IT infrastructure, if you want to call it that, do you think they're on top of the job?
I think some of them are, and I think some of them have the potential to get on top of the job, to be nice about it. But there's certainly an increased awareness. Recently, Department of Community Information Technology and the Arts, or DCETA as they're known, actually helped with sponsoring a trip over to the States where a number of participants from Australia were involved in doing some simulation exercises and learning about SCADA network vulnerabilities at the Idaho National Laboratory in the States, which is one of the real centres for excellence over there, in conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security. And the mix there was, apparently about 50-50 in terms of people that were coming more from the SCADA side and those that were coming from the IT side. And according to all reports and listening to some of the people speak at the workshop I attended on Friday, it was certainly a worthwhile exercise and one that they're likely to repeat.
Well, we're all lucky it didn't end in a brawl. David Shaw, thank you very much for taking time out on the Queen's birthday to speak to Risky Business.
Patrick, indeed a pleasure.
That's it for another edition of Risky Business. Thanks again to our sponsor, CyberTrust, and hosting partner, Vigabyte. We'll be back with a full format podcast next week. Until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.